Now's the perfect time to get your Chevy ready for that next road trip with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. When it comes to service, no one knows your Chevy better. Chevy Drive Chicago. Schedule a service appointment at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer.
Did you know that last week was Help America Vote Day? There was a Help America Vote Day last week, and I don't know about you, but I celebrated. Voter turnout in the U.S. is very low compared to other democracies. And a couple of weeks ago, you may have seen this in the Tribune, it ran a very thought-provoking editorial that talked about compulsory voting laws, making it mandatory to vote. What would happen if we made voting mandatory? Do you like that idea? Would you like to be governed by a government that has a law like that? Make it a civic duty like jury duty? And what would the challenges be to the constitutionality? I think we've already got some texters who are weighing in on that. With us to discuss this is Dr. Shane Singh. He is the professor of public and international affairs and the director of graduate studies in the Department of International Affairs at the University of Georgia. He's been a democracy fellow at the Ash Center for Democratic Governance and Innovation in the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. Welcome to the show, Dr. Singh. Thank you so much for joining us. So do you have any numbers for me or percentages of how many people in this country are registered to vote, how many actual turnout? And I know it goes changes from year to year and cycle to cycle, but what are we talking about here as far as percentages?
Yeah, it's actually been up in the past couple elections, but it usually averages in presidential elections about 65-75%. And then in congressional off-year elections, you know, more like 55%, sometimes barely over half.
So, and how does that compare to your knowledge with other democratic countries? Is that low or is that high?
Yeah, that's pretty low. It's lower than most other democratic countries, in fact. It's hard to find an example of an advanced peer democracy that has lower turnout than the United States.
Are there reasons that you have studied for this? Is this why do people in this country not vote?
There are definitely plenty of reasons, and some of them are attributed to the people themselves. There might be reasons why Americans are particularly disinclined to vote at the individual level, like maybe a lack of civic education, a lack of positive attitudes toward democracy, but a lot more explanation is usually placed at the country level, like different laws that countries have. I think the big one that we're talking about is mandatory voting, but there are other rules and laws that can make people more likely to vote, like some countries have proportional representation versus winner-take-all elections, for example.
And could you explain what that means?
Yeah, so in a lot of countries, most of Western Europe, a lot of South America, for example, if a party gets perhaps 30% of the vote, 20% of the vote, then they're going to get roughly 30%, 20% of the seats. And so that makes small parties more viable. And so people who like small parties maybe have a better reason to turn out to vote in countries like that.
And what, the idea of, you mentioned lack of civic education. Do you think lack of civic education in this country is a problem? And if so, what can we do to enhance it?
I'm not an expert in whether or not it's a problem. I do think, and this isn't really like an informed scholarly opinion, but just my own observations, that the civic culture in a lot of other countries, certainly in Western Europe, is a bit more democratic, small d democratic, and that people see maybe more value in getting involved. Now, in terms of what we can do to enhance it, I guess that would mean more civic education at the middle school, high school level, maybe required courses in college.
So, you see people get involved in the Get Out the Vote campaigns and those types of things. And, To me, it's such a privilege to get to vote. There are places in this world where you can't, or your vote really doesn't matter because it's being channeled in a way that's not really a democracy. But I just find it to be, a joy to vote. And I've always been raised that way. For the people who don't vote, what are the common thoughts going through their head for not voting?
Yeah, I guess it's hard to get in any particular individual's head who decides not to vote, but You know, we attribute it, when we think about the decision to turn out to vote or not in sort of the political science or economics literature, it's like it's a cost-benefit analysis. You're going to turn out to vote if you think the benefits that you're going to get from doing that exceed the cost associated with voting. And so, you know, if I have to take off work, if I'm an hourly worker, then that might cost me some money, some lost salary. So then is the benefit I'm going to get from losing that salary really worth it to me? Well, if there's a party that I really like, if I really care about a particular policy, then maybe there's a bigger benefit, right? But you have to think about both sides of the ledger. And it just seems like in the United States, for about a third or more of people, that cost-benefit calculation comes out against turning out to vote.
We are talking to Dr. Shane Singh. He is studied the issue of compulsory voting and voting in general. And we're getting a lot of texts. We're saying, you know, compulsory voting would be against the country's ideals. Maybe we should just have the elections on a weekend rather than a weekday. Have you looked into any of these options, and do you think that that would change the dynamic in this country if you, let's just say, let's start with the idea of moving the election to a Saturday. Do you think that would change the numbers?
I do, but I think it would only move them smallly, only change the voter turnout just a tiny bit. And the reason I say that is because there's actually been some academic work on this topic, and it finds really small effects. And when I say this topic, I mean weekend and holiday voting. It's kind of looked at both in conjunction. But and you know, the other thing that maybe people wouldn't want is this weekend or holiday voting tends to help like salaried white collar workers turn out more than the retail people, the blue collar people, because they're less likely to get those days off.
Interesting, interesting. And I have a texter here from the 708 area code, a voter. How about a voter or tax credit on your state or federal return? Would that get people to exercise their right to vote? Has that been studied at all? Hello. Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. There's actually been a couple examples of that. Alaska tried that. And Arizona had like a lottery that you would be entered into if you voted. And I do think there were increases in turnout, but I also think, and I don't know the case law very well here, but I think both of those policies were overturned for, you know, paying voters is, you know, illegal. And I think it was on those grounds.
Oh, interesting. So it may not be legal to do just that. We're talking about, you know, when we talk about apathy in the polling place, is there skew in one way or another? Does that skew toward the Democrats or Republicans? If we have more voters, would that mean a more liberal group of people who are voting, or a more conservative group? Or doesn't it work that way?
That way, in fact. And here the conventional wisdom has flipped, right? I think for many decades in the U.S., the assumption was that if you had more voters, perhaps via mandatory voting, it's going to help the Democrats. And that's just probably no longer the case. The last two or three presidential elections, the people who have sat out, had they voted, would have been more likely to have voted for Trump. Pew did some research on this. And like in 2020, of the people who sat out, 54% favored Trump to 42% for Biden. And so these days, with the Democrats being more the party of college-educated people in big metro areas, this assumption that the people who are not voting are going to be Democrats is just it just doesn't hold anymore. So it's funny because a lot of the people advocating for mandatory voting in the U.S. tend to be from the left, but it would probably end up helping the Republicans.
Oh, very, very interesting. I wouldn't have thought that at all. And in fact, you know, the administration has taken some actions to try to, you know, limit absentee ballots and those types of things, which would probably lessen the voter turnout because people do like to vote absentee ballots. But in fact, maybe that would be good for the administration and the conservatives.
Yeah, it's ironic that if the current administration is taking steps to limit voter turnout, it's probably self-harming because the people most likely to stop voting due to barriers are probably going to be more likely to be Republican voters.
Interesting. When people don't vote, is it a situational thing? Like, is it like, I was going to vote, but, you know, I'm registered. I was going to vote, but it was too snowy, or I got sick, or it's too far to walk. I decided the wind is too much. Or is it just, hey, you know what? I don't vote. I just don't vote because I don't think it does anything and I don't care.
I think there's both types, but I guess if what's more like the bulk of non-voters are more toward the second thing you mentioned, where like they're just not going to be voters. They're apathetic. It's deeply seated apathy. It's, you know, people who really want to vote, snow and rain, it moves the needle a little bit, but that's not really going to keep them home. It's like I said, it's more of a deep seated psychological predisposition toward non-voting.
And I know you're not a lawyer, and I am, but, you know, there, some of the texters are saying you really can't force people to vote, that might be a problem. Like in certain religions, like the Jehovah's Witnesses, I'm not sure that my texter is right about that, but that they can't vote. And so how would you deal with that if you were advocating for a mandatory voting law, you know, making people say something, making people vote for somebody? That might be a First Amendment issue. How would you get around that?
Yeah, well, so first of all, it probably is a First Amendment issue. The Supreme Court in two separate cases has found a right not to speak. And so if casting a ballot is speech, then required voting looks like compelled speech. And so there might be a First Amendment issue here indeed. How do you get around it? I think what you do is you add a none of the above option to the ballot paper. And in fact, this is a lot of times when compulsory voting bills are introduced, they usually come with a new none of the above option. And that's, you know, precisely for this reason.
Have these laws, I mean, you talked about Alaska and, you know, but has there ever been on a federal level some sort of push to make a federal law or a constitutional amendment requiring voting?
Well, I'm not aware of an amendment. And right, so when I was talking about Alaska, Arizona, that was voting lotteries. But there have been plenty of states in very recent history, like the last 5 years, I mean, where we've seen bills to make voting mandatory at the state level. Connecticut, Washington, Massachusetts, Illinois, where you're currently sitting, just last year, 2025, had a compulsory voting bill introduced in the state legislature. At the federal level, there's very comparatively a lot less activity, but there was a Connecticut congressperson introduced legislation like four years ago to put compulsory voting as the law of the land in the United States.
So how has this worked out in other countries? What other countries have these kinds of laws, and how has that worked out for those countries?
Yeah, so the peer country that U.S. reformers tend to look to is Australia. They've had compulsory voting for just over 100 years. And it's, I guess if you talk to most Australians, they would say it's worked pretty well. It's a $20 fine if you don't vote. It's enforced, and their turnout is typically above 90%. Other rich democracies are Belgium and Luxembourg. But then most examples actually come from Latin America, specifically South America, where Brazil and Uruguay and Peru and Argentina and several others have mandatory voting. And there, I don't know if it's worked out as well. The just popular opinion toward compulsory voting in South America is much less favorable as compared to Australia. And turnout tends to be high compared to the U.S., but not as high as Australia.
So sort of in closing, what would be the arguments in favor of a compulsory voting law? And then I'm going to ask you what would be the best arguments not to have one.
Sure. So I think probably the strongest philosophical argument is that we have duties in a democracy, right? We compel jury service. We compel paying taxes. You have to respond to the census, actually. That's a duty. And so voting is arguably more important to democracy, to a functioning democracy, than any of those things. And it's probably less burdensome than like jury service, for example. So, you know, I don't think you can say that like democracy means the absolute freedom not to be involved. So that's the philosophical argument. The practical argument is that if you want higher turnout, compulsory voting is the surest way to increase turnout. Some of my own research shows that it increases turnout by maybe 15 or 20 percentage points when it's enforced. So that's it's just a natural way to increase the turnout rate. And increasing the turnout, and in increasing the turnout rate, what it does is it levels out disparities in the voting population. So you have like less age-based gaps or income-based gaps or racial gaps in who turns out to vote.
And let's talk about the arguments against it.
Right. So I think one of them, your texter already alluded to, and is like, it's kind of, it could be compelled speech. It maybe violates a right not to be involved if we have such a right. So I think that's a decently strong philosophical argument. And then from the more practical side, I think there's maybe two main arguments. One is, I mentioned how it increases turnout, and it does, but at the same time, it increases the number of invalid ballots. So when you have mandatory voting, you tend to have more like blank ballots or spoiled ballots where people just scribble on their ballot. So that's, that's one practical counter argument. And the other is that it might actually help the extremes, right? So a lot of the people who don't turn out by their own volition might hold like extreme attitudes of the left or the right. And so if you start compelling these people to vote, they're probably more likely to prefer parties of the extremes. And in that way, it might exacerbate polarization, which runs counter to a common argument that it could actually lead to moderation.
Dr. Shane Singh, thank you so much. University of Georgia professor. Thank you for joining us. Very thought-provoking conversation.